You're listening to Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the Beacon Centre. Unfortunately, due to the unprecedented impact of coronavirus, Talking News will not be distributed on CD until further notice. The health and safety of our staff, volunteers and listeners is our main priority. Therefore, we are sorry to inform you that we have taken the difficult decision not to distribute CDs to our loyal listeners until safe to do so. We're sorry for any inconvenience caused. We're pleased to inform you that the Talking News service is continuing, but as a digital online podcast. This will be available via our social media pages and website each week. Please note we cannot report on any community or sporting events due to the coronavirus pandemic. Thank you. We hope you enjoy this week's edition of Black Country Talking News.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Talking News for Wednesday, the 1st of April, 2020. With me, Pete, Christine, Ian, Mina, Simon, Helen and Steve. In this week's edition, we have local news stories, we have some site loss news, our flashback section where we look at what happened on this week in history. We have a quiz for you this week, a new item, an introduction to talking books, plus a roundup of the week's weather ahead. But first, here's Helen with an update from Beacon.
Things have been more than a little different at Beacon the past week or so. As you will know, we've had to temporarily suspend some of our face-to-face services and close our retail shops in line with government requirements to tackle coronavirus. But we are finding new ways to support you, our members. Our employment team is working around the clock to support both the members they were already working with and those from the wider Beacon family requiring telephone support. They have been checking and ensuring vital support is delivered quickly, including arranging food bank deliveries, making phone calls to discuss medical appointments, helping people to set up online accounts for shopping, and advising on coronavirus and how best to deal with the impact it is having on us all. Meanwhile, our Staffordshire team have been doing regular health checks on our members and continue to offer employment support over the telephone. It has been focused on people learning new skills, such as writing poems or enrolling on training courses. At the main Beacon site in Sedgley, we're continuing to run our care packages and we have been inundated with people wanting to sign up to our telephone befriending service. If you're among those who've put their name forward, we are getting everyone set up as soon as we can. And if you'd like to find out more about the service, you can call Beacon on 01902 880111. That's 01902 880111. Our fundraising team have also been working hard to find new opportunities to raise money for the charity. We have estimated we're losing in the region of £25,000 a week as a result of the changes we're rightly having to make due to coronavirus. We have got lots of fundraising activities taking place on social media, but you can also donate by text. And if you're able to support, it would be so appreciated. To donate £5, text Beacon Crisis, that's all one word, Beacon Crisis, that's all one word, to 70085. Thank you for your support.
Let's have a roundup of this week's local news with Christine and first of all, Ian.
Hello, here is the news for Wolverhampton. A Black Country couple are stuck on board a cruise ship after not being allowed to disembark in Argentina. Phil and Judy Dowell from Willenhall have been on board the Coral Princess since March the 5th and were supposed to end their journey in Argentina last Wednesday, but were not allowed off the ship. The grandparents, both aged 69, are being updated every day on board and were originally told they were sailing to Fort Lauderdale in Florida, which would take 2 weeks. But now the cruise is aiming for Rio de Janeiro within the next few days. Phil said, "The situation is changing all the time. We've just had a message come through to say we might be getting off soon in Rio, which would be fine. Otherwise, we would be heading for Fort Lauderdale, but we haven't got travel insurance or a visa for America, and they'd probably just put us in quarantine for 2 weeks, so I'm not sure how we'd get home. But there are worse places to be stranded than a cruise ship. There's no virus on board. The ship has been very good. There's plenty of food and drink and even some entertainment still. Obviously, our family is very worried about how we're going to get home. It has been a long time, but we're only anxious for our family. Phil said there are 400 British people on board the ship, most of whom have been involved in daily meetings, with some acting as spokesmen. We want to stick together and go home at the same time, Phil added. Phil's sister, Angela Miller, who is at home on Coppice Farm, said, "They seem okay and they are being looked after. It's just the unknown. It's very worrying." But, he said, fortunately the weather is good and the sea has been very calm. In a way, they are safer on there than we are here, as there's no one on board with the virus. Council workers are busy setting up a food hub at Aldersley Leisure Centre in Wolverhampton. It has now become an emergency food centre, sending out vital supplies to more than 33,000 vulnerable people during the coronavirus outbreak. Wolverhampton Council will operate Aldersley Leisure Centre on a 24/7 basis, where weekly food parcels will be distributed. A fleet of 33 vans and additional lorries are on standby, while about 500 council staff have been drafted in to help. Council bosses are hoping to open the makeshift distribution hub in Claregate, Wolverhampton, by Tuesday the 31st of March. Council leader Ian Brookfield said, "This is the biggest council operation I have ever seen while working in local government. I think the job we are doing is fantastic. These are unprecedented times. We have changed the focus of what the council was doing a few weeks ago to come together and keep safe 33,000 of our citizens working in partnership with the NHS. It comes after the outbreak of COVID-19, which has spread across the world and forced Britain into lockdown. The council has already identified vulnerable citizens who are suitable for the scheme. Letters have been sent out advising them about this. The vulnerable people are classed as either being elderly or those with pre-existing health conditions. Council bosses worked alongside the NHS and GP practices in identifying who would be suitable. The hub is believed to be one of the first of its kind in the country. It has followed a government request for councils to deliver food supplies to vulnerable residents. It is understood the council is currently financing the distribution centre, but the government has assured council bosses of financial support if needed." Councillor Brookfield continued, "I have been on the phone to the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Robert Jenrick, and I have taken him on his word. He said, make sure you keep people safe and spend whatever you need to. We will sort you out. He would much rather us overspend on provisions than underspend." Wolverhampton Council has sourced and funded groceries to be used in the food parcels. However, the government will also help out with supplies. Items that residents can expect include loaves of bread, tinned food, cereals, and other long-life provisions. The council is expecting to take delivery of food over the next few days ahead of the centre's planned opening. Security is tight at the centre, with a handful of marshals based at the entrance and others located around site. Visitors are quickly scanned with an electronic device and asked if they have experienced any symptoms. Once food items make it inside, they will be sorted in the leisure centre's huge 26,000 square feet sports hall. A large white marquee tent has also been set up on one of the site's car parks to aid with this. Vans are adorned with messages on back doors saying "Thank you, NHS." Some council workers were seen wearing white overalls, face masks and gloves. Among the task force is Shelley Smith, a communications manager who has worked for the council for 18 years. She will be used as a designated delivery driver, showing the council's all-hands-on-deck approach. She said, "Once up and running, I will be distributing parcels to customers and driving a van. It will be a big team working together. There will be a lot of people on the site working together." She continued, "This is the biggest operation I have seen at the council. I think it shows we are in unprecedented times." As many council resources are being diverted to help tackle the COVID-19 outbreak, Councillor Brookfield added, "I apologise if streets don't get brushed. I apologise if grass verges don't get cut. I hope people realise what the council is doing." Local pubs, restaurants, chains and fast food outlets have been ensuring Black Country NHS workers don't go hungry during the coronavirus pandemic. Workers at New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton enjoyed a number of donations from local businesses, including all the remaining food from KFC in Oxley. The intensive care unit's team were sent a large platter of sandwiches from Subway at Bentley Bridge, while Park View Hotel and Hamilton's restaurant sent in a selection of sandwiches and cakes. New Cross Hospital also received a large supply of food from KFC in Oxley Park View Hotel, and Hamilton's restaurant in Wolverhampton provided a tasty selection of sandwiches and cakes for New Cross Hospital staff. Businesses in Dudley were also praised for their generosity by Russell's Hall Hospital, which received donations from a number of places around the region. The hospital received cobs from Matt the Baker at Bilston Market, as well as a huge stack of pizzas from Domino's in Stourbridge. It also took delivery of 115 takeaway meals from the Four Ways pub in Oldbury and Island Inn in West Bromwich, delivered by owners Amrik Singh and Dal Singh. Finally, staff at Sandwell General Hospital in Smethwick enjoyed a variety of dishes donated specially by West Bromwich-based Chinese restaurant Cantonese House. Nearly £1 billion is needed to get roads in the West Midlands up to an acceptable standard, according to new research. More cash is needed to fix crumbling roads, say campaigners. Prime Minister Boris Johnson recently announced a spending package to fill in potholes and fix crumbling roads, but campaigners say it will not be enough. According to the latest annual local authority road maintenance survey, it would take 10 years to clear the carriageway maintenance backlog in the region. Crumbling roads have also resulted in £1.9 million in compensation being paid out to drivers over the last year. The survey estimated fixing the region's roads would cost £994 million. Councils in the Black Country and Staffordshire have had to contend with huge budget costs over the last decade, which they say has impacted on their ability to keep up with road repairs. While Mr Johnson has pledged to level up Britain with a spending splurge, the Asphalt Industry Alliance says sustained investment will be needed to bring the region's roads up to scratch. Rick Green, chair of the AIA, said highway maintenance budgets have dropped back to where they were 2 years ago. Over the past 25 years, we have repeatedly seen this pattern of short-term cash injections to stem accelerating decline, only to be followed by further years of underfunding. This stop-start approach has been wasteful and does nothing to improve the condition of local road network on which we all rely. In fact, it has just contributed to a rising bill to put things right. The £2.5 billion extra funding over the next 5 years announced in the budget will certainly be welcomed by hard-pressed local authority highway teams dealing with increasing demands on smaller budgets, as well as the effects of extreme weather events such as the recent storms on an ageing network. What's needed is additional and sustained investment to help underpin the government's levelling up strategy and social cohesion goals, as well as complement its ambitions for more sustainable modes of transport. Warnings have been issued to shops across Wolverhampton as part of a crackdown on inflated prices due to coronavirus. Trading Standards officers made the move after receiving a series of complaints about stores charging higher prices for hand wash, sanitizer and toilet roll. Paul Dosange, head of the department at Wolverhampton Council, said most traders had been acting responsibly, but stressed anyone caught would be dealt with robustly. He said Trading Standards is receiving complaints about businesses charging inflated prices on necessity products. Whilst traders are generally free to set their prices for items that are not price marked except by themselves, it is a criminal offence to charge a higher price for products that are clearly marked with a visible lower price. Officers have been contacting stores to issue warnings about this activity, and we will continue with our investigations and deal with those traders that are breaking the law. Most traders are acting responsibly and providing a vital service to our community, but I am concerned that a small minority of traders may simply be taking advantage of the situation. We view profiteering as an aggressive practice and we will deal with it robustly. We understand retailers are going through a difficult time during the current situation, but customers need to be protected and not exploited. Traders who are raising prices in the current situation may breach the Consumer Protection from Unfair Trading Regulations 2008. Customers have also complained about unfair price hikes on other products in short supply. Anyone who spots inflated or dual pricing in their local shops can report it by sending details and any evidence to trading.standards@wolverhampton.gov.uk. Wolverhampton has rubbished previous negative polls and been named the best place to live in the UK after receiving top marks in a new survey. The city ranked highly in Provident's Unbroken Britain Communities survey for being welcoming, polite, safe and well kept. It also ranked highly for being a happy place to live, with residents trusting each other and also for gossiping. It comes after a series of surveys ranked the city as being one of the worst, with a YouGov poll of more than 55,000 people in 2018, naming it the second worst in Britain behind Bradford. Wolverhampton Council leader, Councillor Ian Brookfield, said, "It is no surprise to me to hear that our city has been ranked as the best place to live in the UK, according to Provident's survey. In the past, Wolverhampton has sometimes unfairly been portrayed in a negative fashion. But I can tell you it has always been a welcoming, friendly, polite, safe, trusting and happy place to live, learn and work. It is these qualities and the fantastic spirit the people of our city possess that I am sure will help us get through this unprecedented period of uncertainty as we all rally together." The survey was put together to showcase what areas have come together amid the current crisis. Worcester, Newcastle, York and Liverpool completed the top five. A spokesman for Provident said, "Communities are coming together to help each other more than ever. Wolverhampton has now been ranked the best place to live in the UK, scoring top marks for all categories in our study. The residents have lots to smile about this year, as the city has now been ranked the best place to live in the UK. The only bad thing is they're also now the worst place for gossip."
Here is the news for Sandwell. Sandwell Council has urged residents not to light fires in their gardens. It comes after garden waste collections were suspended in Sandwell following the coronavirus outbreak. Sandwell Council has received reports of residents lighting bonfires on their properties. The council, alongside waste collector Serco, have also stopped collecting bulky waste in the borough. Instead, bin crews are prioritising general waste and recycled waste during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sandwell's deputy council leader, Councillor Maria Crompton, said, "Please be considerate to others. Please do not light bonfires in your gardens. More than ever, we all need fresh air, especially as people are staying at home. Garden fires are also dangerous and can get out of control. Our emergency services are also under pressure at the moment, so please do not light fires. Any extra garden waste you have can be composted in a home composter, stored in your garden, or bagged and put in your shed or garage until our garden waste collections resume. You must never burn household waste, rubber, petrol or plastics. Please help keep the air clean for everyone." Worley MP John Spellar is calling on the government to back the British horticultural industry when it comes to supplying trees. He said there had been no mention of where saplings are coming from for the national tree planting programme. During a Commons debate, Mr Spellar said it was important to back British trees, not only due to the impact on employment, but also importation and issues with pests and diseases. He asked Environment Minister Rebecca Powell, "In other words, will they be sourced within the UK or will we be importing them?" Mr Spellar said the government should look long-term and give long-term contracts to the horticultural industry so that they can rapidly ramp up the production of seedlings to benefit the British economy, but also as a health and safety measure. He said the minister has talked about planting trees, but no mention of where these trees are coming from. In other words, will they be sourced within the UK or will we be importing them?
not only because of the impact on employment, but also importation, as we've seen previously, of pests and diseases. Will she therefore look long-term and give long-term contracts to the horticultural industry? Ms. Powell replied, "I'll forgive the Right Honourable Member for going on because actually it is brilliant to mention horticulture. Horticulture is such an important part of this country and we're in discussions with nurseries because you're absolutely right, they have got to provide these trees. We'd like as many as possible, obviously, to come from the UK because that is very important, particularly on biosecurity grounds. So I see a great future for those nurseries and we're in discussions with the industry." West Bromwich Town Centre would usually have been full of students and office staff grabbing a bite to eat during their lunch break. But with Sandwell College's campuses now shut and many people following government advice and working from home, West Bromwich is eerily quiet. By Monday afternoon, a vast number of shops, restaurants and cafes already had their shutters down and just a handful of stores remained open on the outdoor market, which would usually be a hive of activity. Many businesses based at New Square Shopping Centre had already closed, including big names such as H&M, River Island and Primark. Now those not selling essentials have also followed suit at the request of Boris Johnson. But despite fewer retailers to choose from, some shoppers were still venturing out onto the high street on Monday, many of whom were wearing face masks or covering their mouths with scarves. At Lloyds Bank, customers were queuing up patiently outside and following the social distancing rules outlined on big signs, which stated that only 5 people were allowed inside at any one time. With all but a few stalls on the market and the high street empty, some of the remaining traders said they didn't know how much longer they would stay open due to falling footfall and the uncertainty over what lies ahead. They explained that they didn't think it made financial sense to continue setting up each day if there were no customers visiting their stalls. Davinder Singh, who sells mobile phone accessories and carries out repairs from the stand he's run for 10 years, said he didn't think it was worth remaining open for long because he wasn't going to make enough money to cover the rent for his pitch. Fellow trader Ahmed Firmami, 36, who also offers mobile repairs from his stall, said he'd stayed open so people could collect their fixed phones. "The market is open Monday to Saturday, but nobody is coming. Most of the stalls aren't here and there aren't any customers because everyone's staying indoors. I've decided I'm going to close when everybody's collected their phones. It's not worth staying open now," he said. Grace Manders, who runs a jacket potato stand at New Square, said last weekend had been busier than expected, but there had been a significant drop in the number of visitors to the shopping centre since then. She too had decided it was time to pull the shutters down. Grace, who's been running the stand for just over a year, said she was considering if there was a way to still cater for her regular customers, but wasn't sure if it was going to be possible or if there was going to be enough demand with more people working from home. But one trader who's feeling more confident about the future is Earl Grant, who works at his daughter Natalie Farrell's Afro-Caribbean food shop. "The business has only been open for 5 weeks, but they've already attracted some loyal customers who are returning each week to stock up on groceries." Mr. Grant said the only difficulties they had faced were getting their hands on stock and rising costs due to a surge in demand for fresh produce over the past 2 weeks. He was keeping his fingers crossed that the shop could remain open, even under lockdown measures. "None of us can see what's going to happen. We're hoping we can carry on trading. I think if we can carry on getting stock and we're allowed to stay open, we will, because people need groceries. With a little bit of luck, we should get through this," he added.
Here's the latest news from our local football clubs. Former West Midlands footballers Martin O'Connor and Stan Collymore have registered to be NHS volunteers during the coronavirus pandemic and have urged others to do the same. The pair took to Twitter to reveal their applications, which could see them help delivering medicines and food, giving lifts to health workers looking to get into work, or offering someone to talk to during isolation. Former Walsall player and manager O'Connor insists this isn't about notoriety, but instead on giving back. "I have an elderly mum, age 72, a sister who's ill and a brother who's ill, and they need NHS care and help," he said. "Rather than take, I thought I'd give back a bit and try and help people who are looking after us. If I can do anything to help, then I'll do it." Former Villa striker Colly Moore echoed that sentiment and encouraged his Twitter followers to join him. I have just volunteered to drive, drop off NHS equipment and prescriptions to those isolating, he said. Please volunteer if you can. A great chance for 250,000 of us to do something to help the NHS and its wonderful staff. The return of the football season is set to be pushed back again with an acceptance that there is no chance of a resumption in April. Both the Premier League and EFL are currently suspended until April the 30th due to the coronavirus pandemic. But with the country now in lockdown, clubs in the EFL, including Albion and Walsall, have been told a further extension is now inevitable. The Premier League and EFL are set to meet when a new date for football's return will be discussed. A memo sent to clubs by the EFL board earlier this week read, "It would now appear that recommencing professional football on the 30th of April is not going to happen, and following further dialogue with the Premier League, we will provide further information. For now, clubs in the Premier League and EFL remain committed to completing the current campaign, even if it means running well into the summer. Players cannot return to training until April the 14th at the earliest due to the government restrictions placed on movement in a bid to combat the spread of the virus." Wolves and Albion are doing all they can to lift the spirits of their supporters as the country comes to terms with being on lockdown. The coronavirus pandemic means everyone in the UK is adjusting to a new way of life, with people only allowed out of their homes for essential journeys. But with charities struggling to cope and with spirits across the country low, West Midlands football clubs are doing what they can to lift the mood. Wolves fans could receive a call from a club legend as a part of a new initiative to boost morale. The Wolves at Home scheme will see former players including Steve Bull, John Richards and Kenny Hibbett make 2,000 calls over the next fortnight, starting with the club's oldest season ticket holders. In addition to reliving some great memories of the past, each supporter will be offered the opportunity of assistance with groceries and prescription collections if they're without friends and family support, while also being given the advice to self-isolate. Richards said, "We understand how our older supporters could be feeling lonely at this time. No football, worrying news stories and self-isolation is making all of us anxious. I'm very happy to get behind the Wolves at Home scheme and I'm really looking forward to reliving some fun tales with fans over the coming days." Wolves have already donated thousands of pieces of protective equipment to health teams in response to the coronavirus epidemic. Albion too will be making phone calls to season ticket holders, while the club has also turned its attention to supplying food to those in need. The Baggies have identified 1,800 season ticket holders over 70. A team of 60 staff from the Albion Foundation are making calls to them to make sure they're okay. The club has also put together 150 food parcels that have been distributed between NHS workers, food banks, special schools and elderly people in need. Inside each parcel are essential items such as bread, butter, milk, pasta, rice and toilet roll. Supplying people in need with supplies was the idea of club chef Sean Byrne. The food items have been distributed with the help of the Albion Foundation and the Baggies are now continuing to work with their suppliers to do more. Yesterday they struck up a partnership with McDonald's Hotels, which own a number of luxury resorts in England, including the Burlington in Birmingham. The company has donated more food to Albion, which the club will help distribute. The Baggies have also contacted Sandwell Council to see if they can help vulnerable people in any way. Wolves women have had their season ended early and results expunged because of the coronavirus outbreak after being 9 points clear at the top. Wolves firmly led the way in the National League Division 1 Midlands with only 7 games left to play. However, they have been denied promotion to the third tier of the women's game as all football between levels 3 and 7 has been brought to an immediate end. All football below step 3 of non-league in the men's game has also come to an end with the season declared null and void.
Here is the news for Dudley. People self-isolating in Dudley from coronavirus symptoms have been issued with bin collection advice. Dudley Council have asked those people in self-isolation to take extra care with the waste that they put out for bin collection. Bin collections are continuing as normal, but council chiefs have asked for greater caution when disposing of waste. For those self-isolating due to COVID-19 symptoms, the council has advised that personal waste, such as used tissues and disposable cleaning cloths, should be stored securely within disposable rubbish bags. Additionally, these should then be placed in a second bag, tied securely and kept separate from other waste for at least 72 hours. Dudley Council has warned that recycling services may be disrupted during the current crisis, but said that work is being carried out to resume normal services as quickly as possible. Black Country market traders have offered to donate fruit and vegetables to food banks after council bosses announced a 3-month rent-free period during the coronavirus crisis. Traders in Dudley are offering free bagfuls of groceries to any food banks and charities that can collect them. James Willis, Managing Director of Tudor Markets, which runs the market in Dudley Town Centre, said, "Traders are naturally worried about the future of their businesses during this incredibly testing time. They are so grateful for this gesture by the council to cover the rent for 3 months, which will give them the ability in the short term to continue providing essential, healthy food for people in the town." He added, "Traders are using strict social distancing measures to ensure the safety of customers." Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley said, "Markets are the lifeblood of any town and we want to do all we can to protect the livelihoods of our valued stallholders during these difficult and unprecedented times. By keeping our Dudley market partially open, it will help alleviate the pressure on supermarkets and reduce the risk of crowding in these shops. It will also enable people to make shorter journeys to buy essential food items." He added, "I appreciate the fantastic gesture offered up in return. It shows we really are all in it together and that we will come out of the other side of this together and stronger. Any food banks or charities wishing to collect donations are asked to call James at Tudor Markets on 01384 231 635. A family from Sedgley has been celebrating the latest arrival to their family. The birth of Daisy Ray Smith, now 3 weeks old, means the family now has 5 generations of women. Diane Morgan, 74, welcomed all generations of women into her home in Sedgley to mark the occasion. Brenda Clifford is the oldest of the generations at 101 years old, followed by Diane, then her daughter Claire Beach, 52, then mother of baby Daisy Ray, Charlotte Beach, 29. Diane is overjoyed by the birth of her great-granddaughter. "I am so excited by the 5 generations in my family. It is even more exceptional that all generations are women. We are all such a close family, with only Brenda living outside of Sedgley. It is just extraordinary that there is 101 years between Brenda and Daisy Ray. She keeps looking at how beautiful Daisy Ray is." Daisy Ray was born 2 days after Brenda celebrated her 101st birthday on the 25th of February. Diane added, "We are just so pleased to have a new baby in the family." Families in Dudley are being encouraged to place rainbow paintings in their windows as a sign of unity during the coronavirus pandemic. Dudley Council is asking people to share their paintings on social media by using the hashtag #DudleyRainbow. Rainbow paintings have become a symbol of unity during the COVID-19 outbreak, with people taking up the initiative across the country. Dudley Council is using a design by borough resident Steve Field, which features Dudley's iconic Pegasus statue, with the paintings being placed across council buildings. The statue is located on Scott's Green Island, near to Russell's Hall Hospital, and when built, symbolised hope for the new millennium. Dudley Mayor Councillor David Stanley is inviting people from across Dudley Borough to share their rainbows in windows as a symbol of hope and unity during the coronavirus outbreak. He added, "People across the country are already placing rainbow pictures in the windows of their homes and on social media, and we thought sharing the designs would help to bring together our communities at this difficult time. The government is asking people to stay at home to help us fight the outbreak of coronavirus, and I'm reminding all our residents that they need to play their part by only leaving their homes for the reasons permitted by the government." I would like to pay tribute and send my personal thanks to frontline NHS and council staff such as nurses, doctors, care workers, refuse collectors and many, many more who continue to serve our borough. People can find out more about Dudley's work to fight the coronavirus outbreak, including key council services and latest government advice at www.dudley.gov.uk/coronavirus. A couple from King's Winford were one of the last in the country to get married just hours before the UK was put into lockdown. Corinne, aged 50, and Neil Wilkes, 53, had their wedding ceremony 5 hours before extra measures were put in place to restrict group gatherings. Originally, their wedding date was set for the 9th of May at Dudley Registry Office, but the couple received a call on Friday the 20th of March to say all future weddings were being cancelled. Corinne said, "When they called, I had a bit of a meltdown. I asked, would it be possible if we could come imminently or in the next few days, bring two witnesses and do it earlier? They checked with the chief registrar and called me back to say, if you can get here at 3:30 on Monday, we will marry you. The registry office have been brilliant throughout. I had to then go to the bridal shop on Saturday and get the dress altered, and then we got married with my husband's two children, Brandon and Brodie, as witnesses. It's been a crazy few days." When the wedding took place, government guidelines restricted the number of people in the party to 4, plus photographer Richard Lysett. Although Corinne couldn't have any of her own family at the ceremony, the wedding car made a detour to her mum's house on the way to the registry office so she could see her daughter on her big day. Corinne added, "She came out to the top step and took some photographs of me in my dress. It was very emotional. Our families gave us their blessing and we did it how it needed to be done. We did it by the skin of our teeth. How close we were, as the announcement of all weddings being cancelled was made 5 hours after the ceremony. So we've been thinking we must have been one of the last couples to have got married, especially as a lot of people have been cancelling. When this is all over, we're going to have the biggest party. We just need to see this through." It's not all about putting out fires. As fire crews in Dudley found out after being called to rescue a cat stuck up a tree. West Midlands Fire Service crews from Brierley Hill Station were called to a property in the area on Saturday to help Benji the cat. Benji had been stuck up a tree in a residence garden in the Shaver's End area for 3 days, but fire crews used a ladder and a saw to rescue Benji. They added, "We also partake in tree surgery." A bit of a cliche, but Benji the cat had been stuck in a tree for 3 days. Not anymore, thanks to some creative ladder and saw work. Once rescued, Benji didn't want to hang about for a photo, as he was a bit hungry.
This week we have a fun quiz. No prizes, I'm afraid. It's just a bit of fun. And here's your quiz master. It's Mina.
Here are a few questions on some of the items coming up later in this week's Talking News. We'll give the answers in our and finally section at the end of this week's edition. Question 1. Red Drum won the Grand National 3 times, the final time in 1977, but what were the other 2 years? Question 2. Name the horse that came second in the 1977 Grand National. Question 3. Jockey Charlotte Brew took part in the Grand National in 1977. What was significant about that? Question 4. The BBC fooled the nation in 1957 with an April Fool's hoax. What was it? And finally, question 5. Who was the presenter? Keep listening for the answers.
Sight loss news. There are many conditions that cause sight loss. One lesser known condition is Charles Bonnet syndrome. It's a condition that causes people who have lost some sight to see things that aren't actually there, so also known as hallucinating. It is only caused through sight loss and it isn't a sign of mental health problems. There are two main types of hallucinations. Number one, simple repeated patterns or shapes, such as grids or brickwork patterns. And number two, complex hallucinations of people, objects and landscapes. The condition can be quite frightening, but becomes less frequent with time. Many people who live with eye conditions, such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, or diabetic retinopathy, could develop Charles-Bonnet syndrome. It's difficult to know how many people have the condition, as many people don't talk about it or tell their doctors. It is thought there are more than 100,000 cases in the UK. People of any age can be affected by Charles-Bonnet hallucinations, but they tend to occur later in life after a person starts to lose their sight. The main cause of Charles-Bonnet syndrome is thought to be vision loss and how the brain reacts to it. As when a person starts to lose their sight, their brain doesn't receive as much information as it used to, and it is thought the brain sometimes responds by filling in the gaps with fantasy patterns or images that it stored. If a person has vision loss and they're experiencing simple or complex hallucinations and don't have signs of dementia or mental illness, they may have Charles-Bonnet syndrome. There is currently no cure for Charles-Bonnet syndrome. Simply understanding that the hallucinations are a normal consequence of sight loss rather than a mental health problem can be very reassuring and help the person cope better. There are some things you could try yourself to help relieve hallucinations if and when you experience them. For example, when an hallucination starts, you could change the lighting conditions to see if it disappears. Move your eyes from left to right. Move around and change what you're doing. And remember to make sure you're well rested and getting enough sleep at night. The hallucinations may be worse when you're tired or stressed. Talking books can be very helpful for people with sight loss. Now here's Steve to tell you more.
Hello everybody. Welcome to this, the first edition of Talking Books with Steve Terry. With this being the inaugural edition of Talking Books feature, I thought we'd take a look back at the history of Talking Books, give you a bit of an overview for those of you that aren't familiar with them, and explore what types of formats are available in, as well as where you can access a library of talking books. So, audiobooks, or talking books as you may know them, are recordings of books that you listen to rather than read. Audiobooks can be exact word-for-word versions of books or novels, or shortened, abridged versions. You can listen to audiobooks on portable music players, mobile phones, desktop computers, laptops, mobile tablet devices, home speaker systems such as an Alexa, or in your car if your car supports audio streaming. So the history of talking books. When did they and where did they come from? Spoken audio has been available in schools and public libraries, and to a lesser extent in music shops, since about the 1930s. Many spoken word albums were made prior to the age of cassettes and CDs and downloadable audio content, often of poetry and plays rather than books. It wasn't until the late 1980s that talking books began to attract the attention of book retailers, and then book retailers started displaying audiobooks on bookshelves rather than in separate displays. Before talking books were available digitally, they were sold in physical form on analogue cassette tapes and sometimes vinyl records. However, with the invention of the internet, a vast selection of audiobooks are now available online from many, many different sources. And we'll take a look at some of the sources a little later on. Audiobooks may come, at times, as fully dramatised versions of the printed book, sometimes calling upon a complete cast, music and sound effects. Effectively, these audiobooks are known as full cast audiobooks. Now, as a huge fan of Star Wars, of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and of the Marvel Universe, I myself am a massive ambassador for full cast audiobooks, particularly science fiction, especially Star Wars full cast audiobooks. I have to say, the music and the sound effects just make for a rather special experience. So do look out for these and give them a try. Now, I mentioned earlier that we would touch upon some of the many, many websites and apps that provide access to audiobooks, both free and paid for. This isn't an exclusive list, but to name a few, you can access audiobooks and talking books via your local library service. So your local library will have a selection of audiobooks, as well as large print, paper or hardback books to loan, and an online library of e-books, e-magazines and newspapers. The RNIB, or Royal National Institute of the Blind, for those of you who are not familiar with them, is a UK-based charity which offers a talking book library service. With over 30,000 audio books available to borrow, which are all free to print disabled adults and children. The RNIB's audiobooks are provided in a number of formats and can be delivered to the reader's house by post as a CD or USB memory stick with free postage return. Now, quick tip, just on the RNIB's offer, their CD formats are able to hold one talking book, but their USB memory sticks are able to hold up to three. So bear that one in mind if you do use the Royal National Institute for the Blind to order talking books. And finally, I'd just like to mention another source of audiobooks, that is Calibre Audio, another national charity lending free talking books to anyone who finds print inaccessible or is considered print disabled. Now, there are many, many other sources of audiobooks, and I'll continue to share these with you over the coming weeks. In fact, next week, what I'd like to do is start to look at a latest audiobook release, provide you with a summary of the book's content and the storyline. Maybe you'd like to recommend one for me. Feel free to get in touch, drop us an email, drop us a telephone call, and let us know what books you'd like reviewed. During this section of the Talking Newspaper next week, that's what we'll do. We'll take a look at a new release to the market, and hopefully it will encourage you to go away and have a listen. Between now and then, thank you for listening. Please, please, everybody, stay safe, and remember Beacon are here for anybody that needs them in this rather unprecedented times. And if you do find yourself at a bit of a loose end, why not have a look at a talking book? Take care. Speak soon.
This is our flashback section, where we look back at events that happened this week in history. So we'll go back to April the 2nd, 1977. This was when Red Rum won the Grand National for a record third time. Now, he also won the race in 1973 and 1974, and came home second in the following 2 years. Now, before the race, concern was expressed that at 12 years old, Red Rum was too old for the event, considered by many to be one of the most dangerous on the jumping circuit. But after his victory, jockey Tommy Stack said Red Rum's entry had been justified, as he was an intelligent horse who always looked for the open places and was alert for loose horses. Red Rum's win brought his career earnings to a steeplechasing record of £114,000. He took the lead at Beecher's Brook on the second circuit of the course when Andy Pandy, the leader and pre-race favourite, fell. Red Rum was then never in danger of being caught and came home clear of second-placed Churchtown Boy, with Eyecatcher in third place. Only 9 of the 42 runners completed the 4.5-mile course, and after the race, Red Rum's trainer Ginger McCain felt the horse would compete again the following year, with bookmakers offering odds of 20-1 against him. The 1977 Grand National also featured the first woman rider, Charlotte Brew, aged 21. She almost completed the course, but her horse, Barony Fort, refused the fourth fence from home, forcing her out of the race. Now, Red Rum was entered for the 1978 Grand National, but suffered a heel injury shortly before the race and was declared unfit and unable to run. However, he appeared at Aintree to lead the parade of runners. He remained famous after retirement, appearing at charity events and betting shops and supermarket openings. After his health deteriorated in October 1995, he was put down and buried near the winning post at Aintree Racecourse. Also on this day in history, an April Fool's hoax from the BBC on April 1, 1957, where the BBC fooled the nation with a spoof documentary about spaghetti crops in Switzerland. Panorama, presented by Richard Dimbleby, was a hoax broadcast featuring a family from Ticino in Switzerland carrying out their annual spaghetti harvest. It showed women very carefully picking strands of spaghetti from a tree and laying them in the sun to dry. It received a mixed reaction as some viewers failed to see the funny side and criticised the BBC, where others were taken in by the hoax and wanted to find out where they could buy a spaghetti tree. The programme said that at the end of March, severe frost could damage the flavour of the spaghetti, and it was a worrying time for all spaghetti farmers across Europe. It also went on to point out how each strand of spaghetti always grows to the same length, thanks to the hard work by generations of growers. This was one of the first times television had fooled, well, some of the nation, with an April Fool's Day hoax. Now, the origins of April Fool's Day are unclear, but apparently we can go back to ancient Roman times for the tradition of practical joking and mischief-making, and it's closely related to the coming of spring. We can blame the ancient Romans if we want, and the Celts, who celebrated a festival of practical joking at about the time of the vernal equinox. Also, millions of India's Hindus do the same thing. The French don't call it April Fool's Day. They call it Poisson d'Avril, which stands for April Fish. Now, that's an April Fool, surely. Now, what's the weather got in store for us all next week? Well, it's over to you, Mina.
Here are the sunrise and sunset times and weather report for the coming week. Sunrise, 6:34 a.m. Sunset, 19:49 p.m. Weather report. Friday 3rd of April, light cloud and gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. Saturday 4th of April, light cloud and gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees. Sunday 5th of April, light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees. Monday 6th of April, light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. Tuesday 7th of April, light rain and a moderate breeze with maximum temperature of 13 degrees. Wednesday 8th of April, light rain and a moderate breeze with maximum temperature of 14 degrees. Thursday 9th of April, sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees.
And finally, the answers to our quiz set earlier in this week's Talking News. Question one was, Red Rum won the Grand National three times, the final time in 1977. But what were the other 2 years? The answer, 1973 and 1974. Question two was, name the horse that came second in the 1977 Grand National, and the answer was Churchtown Boy. Question three, jockey Charlotte Brew took part in the Grand National in 1977, and what was significant about that? The answer was, she was the first female jockey to ever take part. Question four, the BBC fooled the nation in 1957 with an April Fool's hoax. What was it? Well, it was spaghetti trees growing in Switzerland. Question five, who was the presenter? The answer, Richard Dimbleby. Now, if you are living with sight loss, and you have your own sight loss tips to share with others, or perhaps you have a joke that we could tell, or you have a brain teaser to make us all think. We would love to feature them on the Talking News, so please get in touch with contact details about to follow. Now, the impact of coronavirus is having a devastating impact on us as a charity, with fundraising activities being postponed, our charity shops closed, and other income streams affected. If you are able to fundraise for Beacon, please stay on our website for ways that you can help. Thank you.
So that's it for another edition of Black Country Talking News. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so by calling us on 01902 880111, emailing us at bctn@beaconvision.org, or send a letter to Black Country Talking News, Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. Thank you for listening to Black Country Talking News and to all our supporters, donators and volunteers. Without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. So it's goodbye from all of us. And please note, the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News. Mentions of goods or services does not imply endorsement. And whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors.